to the window. "See the people down there," she said. "You must dress in appropriate city fashions." Reluctantly, the auditors did so, and while they retained the greyness, they did give themselves clothes that would pass unnoticed in the street. Up to a point, anyway. "Only those of female appearance should wear dresses," Lady Lejeune pointed out. A hovering grey shape said, "Warning. Danger. The one calling itself Lady Lejeune may give unsafe advice. Warning." "Understood," said one of the incarnate ones. "We know the way. We will lead." It walked into the door. The auditors clustered around the door for a while, and then one of them glared at Lady Lejeune, who smiled. "Doorknob," she said. The auditor turned back to the door, stared at the brass knob, and then looked the door up and down. It dissolved into dust. "Doorknob was simpler," said Lady Lejeune. "Tick." There were big mountains around the hub, but the ones towering above the temple didn't all have names, because there were simply too many of them. Only gods have enough time to name all the pebbles on a beach, but gods don't have the patience. Copperhead was small enough to be big enough to have a name. Lobsang awoke and saw its crooked peak, towering above the lesser local mountains outlined against the sunrise. Sometimes the gods have no taste at all. They allow sunrises and sunsets in ridiculous pink and blue hues that any professional artist would dismiss as the work of some enthusiastic amateur who'd never looked at a real sunset. This was one of those sunrises. It was the kind of sunrise a man rises and looks at and says, "No real sunrise could paint the sky surgical appliance pink." Nevertheless, it was beautiful, but not tasteful. Lobsang was half covered in a pile of dry bracken. There was no sign of the Yeti. It was springtime here. There was still snow, but with the occasional patch of bare soil and a hint of green. He stared around and saw leaves in bud. Lutse was standing some way off, gazing up into a tree. He didn't turn his head as Lobsang approached. "Where's the Yeti?"
"He wouldn't go further than this. Can't ask a Yeti to leave snow," whispered Lutse.
"Oh," whispered Lobsang.
Why are we whispering?"
"Look at the bird."
It was perched on a branch by a fork in the tree, next to what looked like a birdhouse, and nibbling at a piece of roughly round wood it held in one claw.
"Must be an old nest they're repairing," said Lutse. "Can't have got that advanced this early in the season."
"It looks like some kind of old box to me," said Lobsang. He squinted to see it better. "Is it an old clock?" he added.
"Look at what the bird is nibbling," suggested Lutse.
"Well, it looks like a crude gear wheel, but why?"
"Well spotted. That, lad, is a clock cuckoo. A young one, by the look of it, trying to build a nest that'll attract a mate. Not much chance of that, see? It's got the numerals all wrong, and it's stuck the hands on crooked."
"A bird that builds clocks? I thought a cuckoo clock was a clock with a mechanical cuckoo that came out when..."
"And where do you think people got such a strange idea from?"
"But that's some kind of miracle."
"Why?" said Lutse. "They barely go for more than half an hour. They keep lousy time, and the poor dumb males go frantic trying to keep them wound."
"But even to..."
"Everything happens somewhere, I suppose," said Lutse. "Not worth making too much of a fuss. Got any food left?"
No, we finished it last night," said Lobsang. He added, hopefully,
"I heard tell that really advanced monks can live on the, life force in the actual air itself."
"Only on the planet Sausage, I expect," said Lutse.
"No, we'll skirt Copperhead and find something in the valleys on the other side. Let's go, there's not much time."
"But time enough to watch a bird," thought Lobsang, as he let the world around him become blue and fade, and the thought was comforting. It was easier going without the snow on the ground, provided he avoided the strange resistance offered by bushes and long grass. Lutse walked on ahead, looking oddly colourful and unreal against the faded landscape. They went past the entrance to dwarf mines, but saw no one above ground. Lobsang was glad of that. The statues he had seen in the villages yesterday weren't dead, he knew, but merely frozen at a different speed of time. Lutse had forbidden him to go near anyone, but he needn't have bothered. Walking around the living statues was invasive somehow. It made it worse when he realised that they were moving, but very, very slowly. The sun had barely moved from the horizon when they came down through Wommelwoods on the rim side of the mountain. Here the landscape had a